Blog Talk Radio.
September 25th edition of RoboGuard Radio with a little pornography. There's nothing wrong with a little Adidas from time to time. But I am your host, KZ, and this episode of RoboGuard Radio is brought to you by our sponsor, WrestleWarehouse.com. You can get pro wrestling DVDs, Lucha Libre DVDs, indie DVDs, SoCal Pro Wrestling out of San Diego DVDs. I highly recommend any show from 2008, the new NWA World Heavyweight Champion, Scrap Iron Adam Pearce, who is from San Diego, works for them frequently, and he's been tearing it up in the San Diego rings when not working for Ring of Honor anymore. But that's a different subject that we will talk about with the champ later on in the second hour. Also, special thanks go out to Sal Tomaselli, who helped me out a lot this week. I'll have to plug his website. That would be www.eliteprowrestling.com. Check out their product. Their TV is awesome. You can watch it on their website, or if you're in the Chicagoland area, I think it still airs at 10. Yeah, I think it's 10 p.m. on Comcast Cable, either 13 or 19. I'm a little hazy, but yeah, and you can also watch it streaming live on their website. You can buy the DVDs. I think there's like 6 shows per DVD, and it's really good stuff. I've seen pretty much all of them. Really good stuff. You can also get the DVDs on their site as well for their shows. Saints, Sinners, and Dragons was a really good show. Yeah, it was really good stuff with a good 3-way tag main event. Really fun. We're going to have, on the first hour, we're going to have Cleveland-based independent worker Sammy Callahan. We're going to talk about Sammy breaking in with Les Thatcher and working Chikara. And he's also working in the upcoming Ted Petty Invitational for IWA Mid-South. And in the second half-hour segment, we will be joined by my favorite black Irish worker, Rick O'Shea. Or if you can prove he's Helios, more power to you, if you can prove it.
Is it still okay?
But, and in the second hour, we will be joined by NWA World Heavyweight Champion Scrap Iron Adam Pearce. And we have a caller on the line from the 937. Who am I speaking with?
This is Sammy Callahan.
Hey, brother. How you doing? Welcome to Rubber Guard Radio. It is my pleasure to have you on.
My pleasure to be on.
Cool. Well, we're going to start right from the top. Ted Petty, you have drawn in the first round. I am pulling it up. You have the honor of getting in the ring with one of my personal favorites, my special Chris Hero. Would you say – you're rather young in the business. Would you say this would be probably one of your biggest matches to date?
Between him or Too Cold Scorpio has to definitely be my biggest match to date.
There you go. Cool. This should be fun stuff because I first saw you in the Chikara Young Lions Cup, and you and Johnny Gargano, or however the hell you pronounce it, both of you guys have really, really captured me. And from what I hear from friends that were at the Chikara show this past weekend, you decided to tear it up. Let's talk about it. How'd you feel your matches went this weekend?
This weekend, it was a long weekend. It was actually capping off my fifth and sixth show of the week, so last week was a really busy week for me. So going into Chicago on Saturday, I was pretty tired, but I feel like it was really fun teaming with The Order and teaming with Trick Davis to wrestle the Soul Touchers, who are so charismatic and just so crazy over in the Chicago area.
They're awesome. They are awesome. All three of them, even the manager. I mean, even the manager, you know, just oozes charisma. They're so
they
fun.
They actually had a fourth member.
Who is that guy?
It's Trauma. He's another big African-American from the Chicago area. Mm-hmm. Probably legit one of the strongest guys I've ever gotten in the ring with. On Saturday, he threw me around like a little kid.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Picked me up like I was nothing.
Since we're talking about the touches, the Urban American Dream, Willie Richardson, that man is amazing. Have you ever been in the ring with him one-on-one?
No, I've never been in the ring with him one-on-one. Actually, this past Saturday was the first time I ever got a chance to be in the ring with him.
Mm-hmm. Well, what you need to do is when you're at the Ted Petty, you need to walk up to Sal Tomaselli and smack him upside the head and tell him that KZ would like to see you and Willie get it on an Elite Pro show. And since I am pretty tight with Sally Sack, I'm pretty sure he can make it happen. But
I'll do it, man. I'll walk right up to Sal and smack him right in the back of the head and tell him,
nah.
This guy wants his match. It has to be me and Willie. Next show, book it.
Hey, he owes me. He owes me. But, yeah, Willie is – I first saw him at the King of Trios Chikara last year, and it just blew me away. And when I found out that he was working for Sal's company, Elite Pro, I was like, I'm ordering discs. I'm ordering TV because I got to see these guys not just in the ring but promos. and I don't know where they got that type of training as far as promos are concerned, but do you feel that you can be taught how to cut a promo, or you have to be, it's a gift?
It's definitely a gift. Like, you either have it or you don't have it. The first time anyone ever tells you to cut a promo, if you mumble your words and you can't get better, there's a good chance you're not going to be that much charismatic. I mean, they can teach you to hide your flaws in a promo, but they can't teach you how to cut a good promo. That's something you have to do on your own.
So, I hear that you broke in with Les Thatcher.
Now, here's one of the guys that break me. I was broken by quite a few guys down in the Cincinnati area.
Now, was Les as crabby as he is now back then?
This wasn't too long ago. This was only I only started training 2.5 years ago, so. Les is a very knowledgeable guy against the business, but he's not someone that everyone's going to get along with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
he's a clashing personality with almost every person I've ever met.
Well, you know, he's an old-timer, you know, and he, you know, he's seen the glory days, he's seen the dark years, and then he sees what's now. Now, as far as influences, who has influenced you as far from a fan standpoint? You know, you're behind your TV. In other words, you come over to my place, and we're going to watch a DVD, and you bring it. What DVD are you going to bring for you and I to sit down and watch?
Okay, this is going to sound really weird, but my two favorite wrestlers and the two guys that influenced me the most in the ring have to be Stan Hansen and Vader. So anything with Stan Hansen and Vader, I'd bring along. Like,
wow. The Tokyo Dome.
Exactly. A couple weeks ago, I was watching Best of Stan Hansen in All Japan, and just the little stuff he did meant so much more. He could work a headlock for 8 minutes, and it'd be the most interesting 8 minutes of the match because he knew how to work that great.
Yeah, his All Japan stuff was just blow away, you know, what the hell can you say? I mean, it's Hansen. And you'd catch these ESPN Classics, AWA shows, and they have him on there killing a job guy or whatnot. And it's like they condense the All Japan match into 5 minutes as opposed to 20. And it doesn't feel the same to me. But, you know, I grew up a huge fan of Brody. And what do you think of Brody and Hansen as a team? Where do you think they are in the top 10 of all-time tag teams?
I love Brody and Hansen in the ring as a tag team, but if we're going to go with the tag team of Stan Hansen, I'd much rather have Stan Hansen and Terry Gordy.
Okay. Oh, wow. Well, since we're talking about All Japan tag teams, you know, Miracle Violence, Gordy and Williams, in the mid-90s, was there a better tag team in Japan?
No. There was not a better tag team in Japan. Maybe when the Road Warriors went over there, just because they're the only guys that really brought the intensity, like the connection did, but it had freaking Williams and Gordy, definitely.
There you go. And the thing is, it's when they brought that to the States and they started doing their thing with the Steiners and all that, with Barry and Dustin and those classic WCW matches, you know, things didn't change because their opponents could do that type of style and go with them. And, I mean, they were brutal, brutal, brutal matches, but they were so fun to watch. Now,
they're great to watch. That's my biggest influence on wrestling. I love, like, the brawling style of wrestling, and just the roughneck, hard-hitting, brawling wrestling, just down and dirty and gritty.
That's what it's about, brother. Now, I must ask, how old are you?
I just turned 21 2 weeks ago.
Jesus, man, you're still in diapers.
I know, I'm still baby boy.
But good thing for DVDs and 24/7, so... You still get to learn, and I think that's what's missing now. Since Cornette is no longer with OVW, he used to give there's a 6-disc Midnight Express set that's out there that he would give to his students. He would give the Bill Watts shoot interview, and there are certain things that Cornette made his students watch, and I think that's missing now in developmental, and you can tell when the guys come up. Because they're not watching this stuff. And it really upsets me that these kids aren't learning right. But then I hear you, 21 years old, you know, wet behind the ears still, and you're watching the best of Stan Hansen. I'm fucking amazed.
Thank you. I've always been a wrestling fan since I was little. The longest memory I have is of pro wrestling, but... When I remember, like, everyone else, like, sort of, like, changing with, like, the years, I was always, like, watching the older stuff, like, because my dad and my brothers used to tape every wrestling. So, I just go through tapes and put in old stuff. Like, I don't know what it is, but I'd rather watch SummerSlam 93 or WrestleMania 9 than watch, like, stuff from 2002 or 2005, just because wrestling back then, they made every little thing count. Like, and stuff was so much simpler, but it just made so much sense.
Well, I've said this since I've been blue in the face. I don't watch the current product. I don't watch TNA or WWE. I can't do it, with the exception of the Michael. Talk about good old-fashioned build. I mean, that's how you do it. And I don't know who pulled the strings or who put things forward, but, I mean, talk about a beautifully done angle, and it's not over. They're going to bring it to Mania.
No, they're right in the middle of this feud right now. It's not going to be over for a while, and I have a feeling like it's going to end at WrestleMania. The climax is going to be at WrestleMania this year because they had such a great match at WrestleMania 19, and that's what they're building to. That's my feeling, what they're building to right now.
Well, see, my thoughts are whoever loses the ladder match will win the Rumble, and we'll get the title shot at Mania. Makes all the sense in the world. You know, I mean, I'm no booker, but, I mean, it's common sense. And these guys, I mean, dude, when Michael's old lady got punched in the mouth, I was like, whoa, whoa. Well, I haven't seen this since Roy Shire in San Francisco. You know, that type of intense angle. And have you ever seen any type of an angle like that ever?
Like on TV or like up close?
Either one.
I really don't know. Like, I haven't really been privileged enough to be a part of something like that. I mean, there's a guy from Cincinnati named John Moxley. Anyone can look up promos of him. Look it up. He's doing this really, really creepy angle right now. Just go type in John Moxley and watch his promos. It's the closest thing to the New Age Brian Pillman that you're going to get. He's that shock factor of a wrestler. Just watch the promos and you'll understand exactly what I'm saying.
And that's JonMoxley.
Yes.
But, oops, what a geek. But, you know, obviously I've heard of him. And, you know, he's been doing his thing for a while. I mean, when did I first hear that name? Oh, boy. Cleveland All-Pro. Are you still working for CAPW?
When CAPW did a relaunch back in July, back in May, and I was a part of that, and I was part of their second show, but my schedule hasn't corresponded. So, like, I want to wrestle for JT and Cleveland All-Pro, and he's the one to book me. It's just we've had schedule conflicts right now. So, but hopefully I'm going to get back there here soon.
Okay. And JT would be JT LaMotta?
No, JT Lightning.
Oh, JT Lightning. Damn. Oh, man. Why do I have JT LaMotta in my head? I heard that name the other day. I talk to so many different guys around the country. It's like, you know, they say a name, and I'm like, hey, wait, I've seen that guy. But then I can't remember, you know, anything else. Before the relaunch, when I would say their first stage, Cleveland All-Pro, who were your notable matches and programs with?
I actually never wrestled for Cleveland All-Pro before the relaunch. I actually I wrestled more down the Cincinnati area and the Indiana area, and it seemed to be that I met JT at a couple shows after Cleveland All-Pro closed, and he said, I'd like for you to come work for me. So things worked out, and I had a couple really fun matches with him, and I just haven't been back since.
So since you've been working, you know, Ohio and Indiana and whatnot, what's taking you so long to work for Ian?
I didn't want to go to IWE Mid-South until I felt I was ready, because the work timing is everything in the wrestling business, and I didn't want to go there before I was ready. So I just picked my time and picked the perfect time, and everything's worked out for me since.
Cool. Well, I mentioned Ian. People have said good things, bad things. I don't care what the hell they think about him. He books the young talent. He's still running. What do you think of him as first off as a boss, and then, you know, as a guy outside the ring?
I don't have one bad thing to say about Ian Rotten. Ian Rotten's never done anything wrong to me. He's always been there for me. Like, he's been there when I've needed a friend to talk to in rough times, and he's been there as a guy that saw something in me and gave me opportunities that no one else wanted to give me. And by, because everyone's always said Ian's had a great eye for young talent of making stars in the Midwest. And I just got lucky that Ian saw something in me, and he's let me take the ball and run with it. And if it wasn't for Mid-South, I wouldn't have been anywhere that I am right now.
Now, as I'm going to have to disagree with you halfway on that one about Ian recognizing talent. I think that Ian is more receptive to listening to people that he knows and that they recommend, hey, check this kid out. Then, you know, then I think that he takes the necessary steps to bring in whomever. And I say that because there are a couple guys, you know, that you don't think would have made it in that company that did, and it wouldn't look like Ian would have brought them in himself. But, you know, it doesn't matter how you get there. But I'm agreeing with you halfway. But Ian...
You agree to disagree?
Kind of, yeah. Kind of.
I've always wanted
to
use that saying. I just didn't know when to use it.
He does bring in the young kids, man, and he's not afraid to use anybody. You know, I got to give him that. You know, what the hell? You know, go out there and fucking work your match. You know, if you get over, he'll bring you back. If not, he'll tell you what you need to do, call you back 6 months later. Because once he likes you, you know, or if he sees something in you, he's not afraid to tell you, hey, man, you know, you need to go to the Elite Dojo and go work with the Tomasellis, or, you know, you need to go work on this, that, give me a call in 6 months.
Exactly.
You know, and
once you're invited into that IWA Mid-South family, when he tells you thank you to the family, you have a job with Ian forever. You'll always have that spot with him, and he'll always be there for you. And he'll tell you, like, Ian's been rough on me, and Ian's been rough on everybody else. Like, he does what he has to do to try to make you better and try to get you ready for the next level. He tells me all the time what I need to work on, and I go, and I watch my tapes, and I try to work on that.
And the thing is, Ian has resources that are, you know, not his, but, you know, he has associates that work with him, like the Tomasellis, that have a really good school up in Chicago, EliteProWrestling.com. I can't say enough about, you know, Sal Vito and, well, Brandon's another issue, but he is definitely the black sheep. But, you know, much love to Sal and Vito. And
I like all those
Sal.
Guys. They're all stand-up gentlemen.
There you go. Yeah, I saw Sal a couple months ago. He was out here in Northern California, and he worked a shot. And, you know, we hung out for a little while and, you know, caught up and stuff. And it was good to see him. You know, he's in really good shape still, and, you know, his body's not beaten up too much. And, you know, they need to get back together. You know, the independent world is not what it should be if the Iron Saints aren't together. But, you know, I mean, they are friends of mine, so I'm a little, you know, I'm a little biased. But now, have you done any tag team work regularly?
A little bit. I've tagged with my buddy, his name's Matt Wright. He's a well-known guy from the indie scene. He's actually been one of my best friends growing up, and we broke into business together. And there's one place that we get to wrestle with each other, and we get a tag, and it's great because it's a guy that I grew up with, and all we ever wanted to do is be pro wrestlers. And now we're a pro wrestling tag team up in Cleveland. And other than that, I'm kind of having a thing with Mr. CJ Otis right now.
Be careful. Be careful. You know, he has picked up a few tricks in his travels to All Japan. So just be careful. That's all I'm going to tell you. His tours are pretty rough, but you know, that's what happens when you're a young gaijin and you know, you're trying to break in, and you know, he got roughed up, but he did survive, and you know, he's going to go back. So, CJ Otis, I think could be another breakout star. But I don't want to see it on the indie scene. He fits more into that All Japan type mold, but that's just me. You know, he's got the stocky build, you know, and he hits hard as a motherfucker. But, yeah, he's
I've had
he's
the privilege of being
good.
In the ring with him quite often, and yes, he does hit like a motherfucker.
Yes.
He's not called the strong style Superman for nothing. That's all.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. Makes me hungry for the next IWA Mid-South Revolution Strong Style tournament. I love those tournaments. Those are so fun.
Those are some of the tournaments that made me want to get into indie wrestling. I drove all the way to the Strong Style tournament my senior year in high school in 05 to see Samoa Joe wrestle. And it was that's when I fell in love with indie wrestling.
That was the year where you had Tank in the first round, right?
Yes.
Oh, brutal. Tank is just brutal anyway. But, damn, yeah, that's good stuff. I love that stuff. Eddie Kingston, another hard hitter. You know, if you play your cards right, you may end up having a date with Mr. Kingston in Chikara. If you do, I feel sorry for you because he is as stiff as they come. What do you think of Eddie?
He is a guy that is on my top of list of guys I want to get in there and mix it up with. He's definitely one of those guys where he's established himself as one of the most hard-hitting dudes in the country for that style of wrestling, and I want to be in the ring with that and see how I fare with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's just, oh, man, it's just like, okay, yeah, it's a work, but fuck. You know, he's that, and he's a hell of a promo. I would say that he is the second best promo on the indies next to Larry Sweeney. But Larry Sweeney's on a whole different level.
Completely different. Completely different guys. But very, very underrated, Eddie Kingston. Eddie Kingston, like, I want to see him get a job somewhere because he's very talented. And he's one of those guys, he really just hasn't got that big break that he deserves yet.
He will. You know, it's just a matter of time. You know, it's only a matter of time before one of the big two picked up Joe. You know, it's only a matter of time before, you know, Kingston gets a contract somewhere. I would prefer to see it with the NWA because I would love to see him in a program with Adam Pearce.
It'd be great.
That's just me. I'm head and shoulders a huge Adam Pearce mark, and I have since he broke in Minnesota and Chicago. But he's
great. I've had the privilege of meeting him a couple times, and like he's so knowledgeable about the business. I'd love to just sit and listen to him talk for an hour.
You can. He's the guest on my second hour.
Fantastic. Everyone should tune in and listen to Adam Pearce, though.
Oh yeah. Well, you know, it today was a breaking news story for Adam, so he's left Ring of Honor.
Really?
Yes. So
wow.
Adam does have news to discuss. Not to mention he just won back the belt. But, you know, that's second to, I guess, the contract. But, yeah, Adam is – he's older than he's an old soul. He's almost, you know, he's 30-ish, but he's got the head and the heart of a guy that's been in the business for 30 years.
Exactly. He's the closest thing that our generation has to an actual four horseman.
Exactly. Exactly. And he lives in the San Diego area, and he works for a friend of mine in San Diego, SoCalProWrestling.com, cheap plug. But he works for them every month, and he defends the title, or when he didn't have it, he was just in, like, tag matches or whatever. And he's the elder statesman, and he teaches these young kids. And, you know, they just sit there, you know, and they're just in awe. They're like, just in awe. Have you had an opportunity to sit around in a locker room or, you know, somewhere else to just sit under that learning tree, like, say, maybe a Tracy Smothers type of guy?
Oh, absolutely. The one privilege I got that training at HWA is I got the privilege of being in the ring and just being in locker rooms with guys like Chad Collier, Nigel McGuinness, BJ Whitmer, John Moxley, Cody Hawk, Matt Stryker, all those guys. And I just listening to those guys, I learned so much about the business, especially Cody Hawk and Matt Stryker. Those were the guys that was there the most at HWA, and they're so knowledgeable. And Cody Hawk, in my opinion, one of the best trainers in the Midwest area, Cincinnati, Ohio. Check out Ego Pro Wrestling, EgoPW.com, cheap plug just like you. He's an absolute fabulous trainer. He's at hand in training everyone from the Cincinnati area in the past 8 years.
Mm-hmm. Well, he did the physical stuff for Les. So,
yes. He was the backbone. Him and Matt Stryker were the backbone to HWA under Les Thatcher.
Oh, and that's the real Matt Stryker, not that goof on TV on Tuesday nights.
Yes,
the real
unibrow.
Matt Stryker. Yeah, unibrow. You know, I loved to hate that guy when he was in ROH. I really did, because he was so bland, but he was solid.
Pound for pound,
you know,
he was one of the best wrestlers at the time, the best technical wrestler at the time. No one could take that away from Matt Stryker at the time. He was the man in technical wrestling.
Yeah, no doubt. The matches he had with Walters were fucking awesome. John Walters, they were just awesome. But, you know, they didn't have any charisma. It just, you know, but it was a technical, you know, just a, you know, a 20-minute, you know, class on how, you know, on how to work. And I think that it was important for the young guys in that locker room at that time to watch those matches. I mean, because you can learn, you know, in the dojo, you can learn by watching. You can learn by watching on TV. You can learn by being on the radio. You can. There's many different ways to learn. Now, are you a proponent of watching other matches?
What'd you say? I'm sorry.
Do you watch any of the other matches when you're working a show?
Oh, absolutely. Like whenever I'm at a show, I try to watch as many matches as I can, because it doesn't matter if it's the first match on the card or the last match on the card. You can always learn something new, and you can never stop learning. Like, anytime I get to see anyone work, like, I just like to watch people wrestle.
Yeah, a very close friend of mine, Michael Modest, from out here, he when he goes to shows, he watches every match, and he will, you know, he'll learn something good or bad, what not to do, or maybe something that he can put into his game. And he preaches that to his students. And, you know, it goes on down the tree. And that goes to the Tomasellis, you know, since Sal was trained by Mike. And, you know, it goes all the way down. And I think it's important that, you know, a lot of these young kids that are breaking in, they don't watch the rest of the card. You know, they work their match, they go get their envelope, and they have to head out. No. No way. If I were running a company, it would be, no one will get paid till the end of the night. If you choose to watch the match, that's your problem, but you're going to be there for the whole, you know, 2.5-3 hours or whatever.
Exactly, and that's just about respect. That's just about showing respect to your peers, because they've sat through your match, now you need to sit through all their matches.
Exactly. Exactly. And plus, you know, anybody's opinion can be valued, and I'm a believer in that. And, you know, friends of mine that are really cool, really close friends of mine that are in the business, they call me and they're all, hey, brother, you know, how was this match? Because I've seen, you know, pretty much the who's who. You know, I mean, I've been a fan since 80, so I've seen, you know, pretty much everything, you know, and they take it as respect. Out of respect, they like to be critiqued. Not trying to put myself over as a schmuck or whatever. I think it's important that guys get feedback, positive or negative, but it's the way you go about it. Now, how open are you to, after a show, you know, going out to your car and, you know, stopping and talking to fans and getting feedback from them?
Oh, I love getting feedback from everybody. I love getting feedback from fans, because fans aren't wrestlers. They see wrestling differently than all those workers do. Like, getting their opinion and knowing what they like and what they don't like helps you out a lot. That's just doing your research of how to get over with a crowd. If you keep doing something that a crowd's not going to like, then don't do it.
Very good point. Very good point. Okay, well, let's go back to some of your influences. Okay, the big boys, Vader and Hansen. Doc and Gordy, were there any more technically based guys that you really paid attention to?
Fit Finley and William Regal.
Yes.
Two.
Money.
Another two of my favorite. Like, with, like, brawling and, like, fighting, like, I'd go with Hansen and Vader, but with, like, wrestling and, like, mixing wrestling, like, technical wrestling with brawling, Finley and Regal. Like, bottom to none.
Oh, yes. That's the good stuff, you know, and not just, you know, what they've done recently. Their European stuff was just hands down. Have you seen any of their European stuff?
I'm sorry, you're breaking up. Can you say that one more time?
Hold on just a sec, brother. Give me just a sec. I was downstairs. I had to change the laundry. We do everything live on the air here.
Okay. I'm actually sitting at a bowling alley right now, Mr. Drake Younger. So.
Drake. I got a problem with that guy.
How can anyone have a problem with Mr. Drake Younger? I've never seen that man without a smile on his face.
He doesn't return phone calls, but that's okay. I'll just have his trainer call him again, and you know we'll let Frank get on him. And well, there you go. I mentioned Frank. What do you think of the American Kickboxer?
I love the American Kickboxer, and I love Tarek the Great too, because you can't talk about American Kickboxer without talking about Tarek the Great. He's another one of the guys that taught me so much in this business, because he actually started coming back around HWA right around the time I got trained, and I got put in the ring with him a lot when I was really young, and taught me so much about just calling things on the fly and just making every little thing count. Like, I keep putting that across, that you got to make every little thing count. And that's what he always hammered in my head, and what Les and Cody and Shark and all those guys always hammered in my head.
Yeah, it's Frank has not gotten the respect that he deserves either, but, you know, I had him on the show for, I don't know, about an hour, and I was just amazed. I was like, okay, you know, if you're not at least going to a seminar that this guy's running, you'll be out of your fucking mind.
He's so smart just to listen to him. Like, I got the privilege of going to a seminar at the Evansville Coliseum when I first started wrestling, and he put us through the ringer. It was one of the hardest 3 hours of my life, but I learned so much and, like, earned so much. Like, he taught you respect. That's what you need to know, because he's such big on respect.
So, for during the Ted Petty, are you going to bring your own chair to sit out there with the fans to watch Tracy Smothers and David Taylor?
I'm going to probably be sitting somewhere watching that match just in awe. Like, as soon as I saw that match announced, that was the one match on the card where I'm like, oh, my gosh. I totally turned into a dumb fan inside. I'm like, I want to see this match more than anything.
Exactly. That's just going to be amazing stuff. I mean, plus Aries, who's back, thank God. Hopefully we'll have a Swiss Money Holding reunion with him and Claudio. He's got the newly released Ace Steel. Have you crossed paths with any of the Saints, Punk, Cabana, Ace, and then the unofficial Adam Pearce, of course?
I've got to meet Adam Pearce a couple times, and he was just such a knowledgeable guy to meet. And, like, the brief words I had with him were very knowledgeable and very, like, entertaining. Such just a guy that captivates you listening to him. But I've never got the chance to meet Ace, never got the chance to meet Punk, never got a chance to meet Colt. And it'll be great to meet Ace, because he's truly, like, he's – how long has he been wrestling now? He's been wrestling for, like, forever. And he's one of those veterans that don't get the respect he deserves right now.
The second best facials in the business.
Great.
Next to Regal. Well, that's just, you know, my opinion. The whole when Ace snaps and those big blue eyes just pop out of his head, it's like, oh, okay, someone's in trouble now. Just scares me, you know, as a fan, and you know, just watching, you know, watching on tape or something, and it's just so intense. You see, have you gotten in the ring with any of the? Okay, I know it's not right to classify guys, but the higher tier indie guys, like you get Hero at the TPI. Have you been in the ring with any of the higher end indie guys?
I've got the chance to wrestle. I got a chance to wrestle Two Gold Scorpio at IWA Mid South. I've got the privilege of wrestling Drake Younger quite a few times. I'm trying to think if there's anyone. I've wrestled Zach Gowan. Actually, it was like my eighth match in the business at HWA. I got to wrestle Nigel McGuinness. I actually got to wrestle him three times. I got to wrestle Chad Collier a lot when I was at HWA, and Matt Stryker and all those guys. So, I mean, I was spoiled when I first started wrestling. I got brought up in a great environment that I just got to learn so much, and just got so much experience at such a short time at HWA.
Well, at that time, there were so many guys there. I mean, the roster was awesome. Did you ever get in the ring with Rory Fox?
Rory was actually gone when I first start wrestling at HWA, but he came back and made a few appearances. I got to meet him, but I never got the chance to be in a ring with him.
Okay. Yeah, Rory's a good dude, man. He's, you know, he's solid. You know, he's doing his thing down in Texas, and, you know, he's doing rather well down there in a dead state, which is cool. And no offense out there, Mr. Fuller. I didn't mean to call your state dead. Just it's not as booming as other places, shall we say. So how far out of the Ohio area have you branched? You were in the Philadelphia area for Young Lions, and then up Chicago for Chikara. Have you headed out west yet?
I have not got a chance going out to the west coast. I think the farthest I've been, I wrestled for ICW in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I think that's the farthest I've been other than Canada. So.
ICW. Is that Dysfunction's company?
Yeah, that's this is Fed.
All right, well, we're talking about Big D. I love that kid. If he'd stay away from the deathmatch stuff, he'd be awesome. But I say the same thing about Drake. But that's just because it's not what I grew up watching. What are your feelings on Dis as a worker?
Oh, he's very underrated. Very great. He's never really got a chance to expand and branch out other than the Midwest, but definitely an awesome guy that could be there if just he got a chance or got a break, or definitely very underrated.
Yeah, he's just amazing. You know, he's not a little guy. He's got really good size.
He does some innovative stuff. He does some very innovative stuff. He does that Death Valley driver into the leg drop, and he just moves so well for how big he is. I think he probably weighs like 230, 240, but he moves like he's a 200-pounder.
That's nuts. It's a shame because, you know, he kind of got labeled, you know, as a deathmatch guy because of the higher profile King of the Death stuff he did for Ian. But, you know, I've seen him, you know, go a good 20, 30 minutes of solid technical stuff, and you know, he's just blow away. I'd like to see him, you know, latch on with one of the bigger indies. I think that, you know, he'd be able to keep up with probably most of the ROH roster.
Absolutely.
But, you know, that's just my opinion. But, you know, and Dis knows, you know, I got respect for him. He's just awesome. So answer this for me honestly. Since you've been in the ring with Scorpio, will the C ever fall off of the word cold?
Okay, I really don't know how to answer that.
Hey, you know what? That brother's getting close to 50. And he's still doing this.
It's amazing. He still flies better today than he did back in the early 90s. It seems like the older he gets, the younger he looks.
Exactly. Exactly. But now he's worked in that Noah style, you know, where he uses some strong style, and then, you know, the submissions, and then he flies when it's needed. But when he does fly, it's still like, whoa, where's the gravity with this dude? You know, and he's working a rather full schedule. He's not stopping, and he's all over the place. You know, he's working for Ian. He's working in Philly for PWU. You know, he's all over the place. And, you know, it's fun to see him. And, you know, we're trying to get him out here. I'd love to see him and Modest go at it. And, you know, he just can't get the time to come out. And it's a shame. So let's talk about your match with Scorp. First of all, is it available on DVD?
Yes, you can pick it up at smartrockvideo.com. And it's Put Up or Shut Up 2008. From last month. Everyone should pick it up. It has an amazing match also between Drake Younger and Dingo, and it also has Trevor Murdoch versus Nick Gage, so it's definitely a DVD worth picking up.
Nick Gage and Trevor Murdoch?
Whoa. Absolutely.
Talk about a styles clash. Wow, that'd be pretty cool.
It was a very hard-hitting, awesome match.
There you go. Dingo. Dingo, Dingo, Dingo. It's about time this guy's gotten the love. First it was Seidel.
Absolutely.
Then it was Delirious and Daisy Hayes, and now it's Dingo's turn. Those St. Louis guys, Dingo's just amazing. Now, he is in the tournament. He is working
Canadian Crazy versus Michael Elgin. First round.
Oh, boy. He's in trouble.
Another one of the most freakishly strong people I've ever been in the ring with.
Oh, man. Michael Elgin's a monster.
I'm speechless about Michael Elgin. He's that strong. Just thinking about how strong he is. And he hits like he's a fucking brick house.
I don't want to call him Baby Huey, but, you know, he reminds me of that big dude, you know, in high school that I don't want to call him slow, but you know what I mean. Sluggish dude that, you know, people try to pick on, and then he'll finally snap and he'll kill someone. He's just a monster.
Dude, don't talk about Michael Elgin like that.
He lives in Canada, so.
I don't care, man. He gets his hands on him. He'll rip your arms off and beat you with them. That's how strong he is.
As long as I get him on the West Coast, I don't have a problem. You know?
There we go.
Hey, it's not just Pro Wrestling Guerrilla out here, brother. That, you know, and I've been preaching that since I've been blue in the face. You know, there's other wrestling out here. But, so have you tried to, you know, send out tapes or DVDs to any promoters out West?
Not yet. Like I said, timing's everything. I don't feel like right now is the perfect time for me to go over to West Coast right now. Right now is my time to make a name for myself in the Midwest and the East Coast. And once I get on top of that, maybe then I'll start talking about going to the West Coast. But timing's everything.
Smart man. You are obviously trained by Les. That's painfully obvious. okay, let's see.
Hey, don't just put every Les as one of my trainers. Cody Hawk, Shark
Boy. Well, Cody Hawk, of course. Oh,
and Shark Boy. Shark Boy's actually the guy I got my start with.
Sharky.
Prettiest eyes in the wrestling business, I'm telling you.
Tell me, do you prefer the Shark Boy, the original Shark Boy, or the Stone Cold Shark Boy?
Hey, I don't think it matters. As long as Shark Boy's out there doing his thing and making money, it doesn't matter what he's doing. As long as he's making a living doing what he loves to do.
I find the Stone Cold stuff funny as hell. It's goofy. And, you know, but wrestling doesn't always have to be serious. You know, there should be a little bit of comedy everywhere, here and there. And, you know, it keeps things light and, you know, keeps things interesting. And, you know, but then, you know, he's going to end up turning heel one day and it's going to be a shock and, you know, it's going to be fun. You know, and that's cool. And it's something different. So now in your travels down the road, I'm not saying that you've worked with anybody, but have you seen anybody that could be, you know, the next, you know, breakout independent star?
I'll put over John Moxley again. He's had WWE dark matches, WWE trial matches, one of my very good friends, and he's so amazing in the ring, and he's never really got an opportunity to wrestle for a Mid-South, never got an opportunity to wrestle for CZW. He got to wrestle Young Lions a couple years ago, but when he got done with Young Lions Cup, he went straight down to Puerto Rico and spent, I think, 6 months in Puerto Rico. And ever since then, he's never really got a chance to get back up on the indie wrestling horse bandwagon.
Okay. Well, you've convinced me. I will go to YouTube and type in John Moxley and see what happens. Well, I am completely out of questions. So what we're going to do is we're just going to shoot from the hip and we'll go from there. Now,
okay,
let's say I'm booking a show and I have you booked and I can fly in any worker that is not under contract, WWE, TNA, or ROH. Who would you like me to fly in to work with you?
I can't work Vader either, can I?
He can barely walk, so. I mean, if he could, He's about 500 plus pounds now, so it'd be kind of tough to carry him.
If I had to pick any worker that you could fly in, I would probably either say Eddie Kingston or Takeshi Morishima.
Mm. Well, okay, you brought up Morishima. You know, is he the second coming of Terry Gordy?
Absolutely, he's the Japanese Terry Gordy. Like, seriously, Terry Gordy could have got a girl pregnant in Japan, and that could be his son right now.
It wouldn't surprise me. It honestly wouldn't surprise me. You know, he's more Terry's son than, you know, than what is it, Jesse on SmackDown, I think it is.
Yeah.
You know. but yeah, Morishima is just an amazing. I can't say anything more about him. I mean, he's just fucking awesome. You know, and I've seen, you know, ROH stuff. I've seen, you know, pretty much his whole Noah run since he broke in. And
his stuff
just
in the States is nothing compared to the stuff in Japan. If wrestling fans have only seen the stuff on ROH, they should definitely seek out his Japanese stuff, because the stuff in Noah is so captivating and just so just hard-hitting, and it's 10 times better than the stuff in ROH was.
Yeah, the title change with Kensuke was just blow away. I mean, I would say it'll probably be in my top five for match of the year so far.
Absolutely. His stuff in ROH is fantastic, but that the Japanese
light
stuff that not a lot of people get to see is he's having incredible matches, every match in and match out.
Yeah, I'm waiting for ROH to distribute the Noah product more, so that it gets to a broader audience. Just because the guys that are in Noah, I mean, Kenta, obviously, is just blow away. Mir Fuji, Go Shiozaki, there's another guy. I mean, that guy's a stud.
Yes.
Go can go. No pun intended.
Ridiculous, man. Ridiculous.
Yeah, those are just some guys, and, you know, I'd like to see them. You know, I'd like to see Morishima, you know, move here for a 6-month excursion and just work for, you know, Harley and ROH and you know, and stuff like that, so that, you know, he gets that American seasoning and brings it back, you know, to Japan. But yeah, I can't explain Morishima to anybody. You just have to see him. And other than the comparison to Terry Gordy, now we have the second coming of Terry Gordy. When are we going to get the second coming of Doc Williams?
I don't know. That's a hard one. There's no one really out there that's really Dr. Death. Like, Dr. Death's going to be a hard guy to duplicate. It's not going to be very easy.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, Doc's just, and he's been doing it at a high level since he broke in. How far back have your your viewing gone? Have you had a chance to watch any of Watts Mid-South, UWF?
Yes, absolutely. Anytime I can get my hands on any wrestling, like, I'm going to grab it, I'm going to watch it. Like, my friends tell me I'm obsessed, because I literally am. I get home, I train, I work out, I watch wrestling tapes. That's my day, pretty much.
Mm. Yeah, me too. Do you watch the current product at all?
Like I said, anytime there's wrestling on, I'm going to watch it. So it doesn't matter if it's a tape. Like, anytime there's anything wrestling related on TV, I'm going to watch it. Anywhere from ESPN at midnight or WWE at 9 o'clock. I'm going to watch it, and then when it's done, I'm probably going to put in a wrestling tape.
There you go. Well, since you're one of the boys, I'm going to ask you this. Now, this past week on Raw, Michaels put over Cade in a tag match, and it really didn't mean anything. There wasn't a big write-up or anything on WWE.com or anywhere else. Do you feel that there's anybody on the WWE roster that could do a job that means something to elevate anyone?
Anytime Triple H or John Cena puts someone over, it usually means something. I don't even remember the last time I really saw Triple H lose clean.
Shelton Benjamin is the answer. The last time he put over a young kid. I was on a different radio show last night, and I was talking with my friends who's the host, and I said that there's the one guy in that locker room where if he does a job, it will mean something, and that's The Undertaker.
Oh, him too, absolutely. He's one of those guys that's been there almost longer than anyone else right now, and he's definitely a guy that if he puts someone over, it means something.
You know, he's adapted. You know, he's changed with the times, and, you know, he's one guy I still enjoy watching. The program he's had with Edge was fun. That's one of the few bright spots for me. Thank God I have TiVo. So, but what do you think of Taker and his run, starting from the Dead Man at the Survivor Series all the way up, you know, through his different incarnations? What do you think of Taker?
Taker's one of those guys where, like, looking at him, you wouldn't really see him as a technical wrestler. You always see him as the brawler type, and you always see him as, like, the top guy in the company. But, like, anytime he puts someone over, it means something. Pretty much any storyline he's in, for the most part, is the main storyline. And like I said, like, he can surprise people. Like, his match at No Way Out from, I think it was either 2002 or 2003 with Kurt Angle. It was technically sound. They're giving each other reversals. They're doing everything. So Undertaker can go from a brawler to being a technical wrestler. He can do it all, and he has the best timing in professional wrestling, just as he puts stuff together.
Yeah, I knew, you know, when I first saw him in Memphis and then in WCW as Mean Mark, I knew he was going to be a star. I didn't know how or where or why, but just knew, you know, once he did that rope walk, and, you know, I was like, whoa, dude, I haven't seen that since the spoiler, and, you know, this guy's he's probably a shoot 300 pounds.
Yeah.
And, you know, just an amazing athlete and a great storyteller, and I think that's what's missing now, that doesn't capture me as a fan, is everything's too fast-paced, and I can't get a story here. I want to be told a story. I've always been, you know, call me old school, call me true school, call me whatever you want, but I believe in storytelling. And now my question here is, do you think that guys are given the opportunity and the time on the indie circuit to go out there and tell a proper story?
Any amount of time is a long enough time to tell a story. It just matters how you put a match together. It matters your reasoning in a match. It doesn't matter if you have 1 minute or you have 30 minutes. If you put the match together correctly, it can tell a story.
Okay. Well, let me reword this. Would you prefer, say Ian is giving you a match with, okay, say Dingo, and he says you can have 10 or 20 minutes. Which one would you take? Would you take the 10-minute match or the 20-minute match?
I'd take the 10-minute match because, like, me and Dingo's first match, we went, I think, 7.5 minutes. And the reason our match is so noticeable on that card is because it was one of the shorter matches on the card, and every little thing we did meant something. So people don't have to sit through a long 20-minute match. They sat through a 7-minute match that was hard-hitting and fast-paced from start to beginning, and you don't have to go 20 minutes to make people remember you. You don't have to go 30 minutes to make people remember you. Sometimes it's necessary, but you can always tell that story and have the crowd remembering you in 8 minutes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Would you say it would be because of the style? Say guys go out for 10 minutes and it's, you know, a high spot type of flying type of match with guys, you know, all over, like they're in a beehive, as opposed to a stronger style. I think that you'll be able to go out there for 7-8 minutes with a stronger style, and it would be more believable as opposed to guys going out there for 7 minutes just flying around all over. It just doesn't make sense to me.
Exactly, because people's going to get tired and people's going to get banged up from doing that style of wrestling.
And the fans, it's like a fucking ping pong match. Left, right, left, right. But, you know, people say I bury cruiserweights, quote-unquote cruiserweights or flyers or whatever. But, you know, it's not about how many spots you do. It's how you put them together. And I mean, I've seen some really graceful flyers, and Matt Seidel, Evan Bourne, whatever you want to call him, he is it as far as flyers are concerned now. And have you – do you enjoy watching Matt Seidel in the ring?
Absolutely. He's phenomenal. The stuff he does in the ring is just so smooth and just so – it's like watching someone that defies gravity. So, like you said, he used to wear his gravity shoes or gravity pants or whatever. So he's a guy that defies gravity.
Well, he's been compared to Pac from England and Dragon Gate and Pro Wrestling Guerrilla and pretty much every other big indie. But the thing is with Pac, he's not as fluid and graceful with his flying that Seidel is, and I don't know why, but it's just I prefer graceful as opposed to sloppy. It's an art, you know. Go out there and paint your picture. You know, you don't see artists that are doing portraits that they draw a woman and put a mustache on. You don't. It's not that way. Things need to be done properly, and I think that now that schools are opening and with guys that they know what they're doing, and Les is doing his things and all that other. Hey, sounded like someone carried. Did someone get a strike? That sounded like a strike to me. That sounded like a strike to me.
I don't know. Someone may have got a strike.
That's what it sounded like. Sounded like they carried the temp in. But yeah, it's just me. But I'm going off on a tangent.
I'm actually going to talk to you while I bowl a frame of bowling.
Oh, it's tremendous.
Yeah, it's been my turn for the last hour. So.
I'm sorry, Drake.
I have three left standing. I have three left standing. So I'm guessing if I'm doing my math correctly, I hit 7/10.
Yes. Yes, sir. Now pick it up, unless it's a split.
Oh, no, it's right down the middle.
One, two, three.
I only hit one. I suck at bowling.
You missed. That's okay. Not everybody can be KZ on the lanes. All right, brother. So how would people be able to get in contact with you if they want to book you or send you fan mail?
Best way to hit me up is on MySpace, myspace.com/JaySinRush, spelled Jason Rush.
Nice and easy. Awesome,
absolutely.
Awesome, awesome. Sammy, thanks for coming on, brother. It was my pleasure. Hopefully we will see you in an Elite Pro ring very soon. I think you'll fit in with the Tomasellis. So
absolutely.
Good luck at the Ted Petty, brother, and hopefully you can move on. And if not, look at it this way. You get to see Dave Taylor and Tracy Smothers do their thing. So it's well worth the drive anyway.
Yeah, it's worth the price of admission.
There it is. All right, brother, you have a very safe weekend, and take care, and hopefully we can have you on again.
You too. Have a great day. It was a pleasure.
Awesome. Thanks, brother. All right, that was Sammy Callahan from the Ohio area. Sammy will be working the IWA Mid-South Ted Petty Invitational Tournament. He will be working in the first round. He will have the honor of getting in the ring with Chris Hero. You can get information on this pretty good show that they do a tournament every year. It's really fun. IWAMidSouthWrestling.com. IWAWrestling.com. Or IWAMidSouthWrestling.com. Excuse me. I better not get that wrong. I had to have my fact checker, Sal Tomaselli, work it out for me. But enough of that. Let me take a breather here. All right, I am back with the newly crowned NWA World Heavyweight Champion, Scrap Iron Adam Pearce. Well, Adam, how's it going, brother?
It is going good, my friend. How are you, KZ?
Oh, blown up, man.
Sounds like you. You all right there? You need some oxygen? What's the deal?
Just a bit tired. Sammy Callahan from Cleveland, you know, blew me up. But, you know, that's what happens when you have a 21-year-old on the show.
That's true.
So, Mr.
Take a breather, man. You need some albuterol. You got asthma. What's the deal? I can help you out there. You need a bronchodilator or what?
Nah, I'm good. So,
okay.
Larry Sweeney has dropped a bomb today on his hotline.
He didn't tell anybody, did he?
It's out. Mike Johnson let it out today on whatever that troll's website is. So what happened, brother?
What was reported? You know, the times are tough. Without going into any detail that nobody needs to know, times are tough in Ring of Honor, and I was honestly waiting. You know, I expected the phone call to come months earlier than it did, so it was not a surprise at all. In fact, it was something that had been discussed on a couple of different occasions, and it just came to a point where something needed to be done, and it was done, and here we are.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, I need to ask, this past weekend with your match with Brent, was he seriously injured? Was he hurt?
No.
Okay.
No, his feelings were hurt.
Get back that beautiful belt.
You know, I mean, listen. I mean, the truth of the matter is that we're in the wrestling business, and it's our job to cause people to suspend their reality and to suspend belief. You know, and with Brent being hurt, you know, maybe a bunch of people got worked, or maybe he's really hurt. I don't know. You tell me.
There it is. Doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
It really doesn't matter. You know, I'll say this about Brent. With my departure from Ring of Honor for the time being, and I say for the time being because I know at some point I'll be back. So it's just a matter of it. You know, is it in a month? Is it in 3 months? You know, was it in 6 months? I have absolutely nothing but the utmost respect for everyone in the Ring of Honor offices, from the top down to the bottom, and to the guys putting the ring up. And I want to publicly thank Nigel McGuinness and Roderick Strong for their kind words. And, mostly Nigel, because, you know, anyone who's talked to Roddy at any length knows it's like talking to a retard. But no offense to our retard fans out there. But Roddy presented me with a nice going-away gift, a 30-pack of Miller Lite, which I always do appreciate. And Nigel said some things in front of the locker room that hit home, and I really do appreciate all the time. You know, the 3 years that I was in Ring of Honor flew by, you know, and for someone who wrestles a style that has been, I guess, completely opposite of the norm in Ring of Honor since the day I got there, I had a blast, man, the entire time, you know. I hope that the fans can appreciate what it is that I brought to the table, regardless of what situation my character was put in, regardless of how I was booked. And I showed up, laced them up, and always did precisely what was told and what was asked of me, and did it the best I could. So if this chapter of my wrestling career is indeed closed, and I don't think it is, but only time will tell, then it was well worth it. And I had, like I said, a blast from you know, September of 2005 to September of 2008. A lot of memories, made a lot of friends. And, you know, it was certainly for me the probably the best three-year stretch that I've had in wrestling. And this is now my 13th year, so it's I'm not looking at it as a bad thing. I mean, literally, I mean, look at our economy. You know, people are facing financial difficulty in all businesses and all facets of life. You know, in California and Nevada alone, some 19 million people are in jeopardy of losing their homes, and in foreclosures at an all-time high. And, you know, airline tickets are priced in a large part to the cost of the fuel that it takes to power these jets. And when you live in San Diego, and, you know, 100% of the flights you're taking are taking you across the Mississippi going east, my flight, if it's not the most expensive in the roster, it's probably second, maybe the Danielsons out of Seattle. But, I mean, like I said, long time coming. I've never been in a position in Ring of Honor where I was, and I dare say the word needed, but from a storyline standpoint, my character was never put in a position where he was a must-have on the show. And that's, you know, that's neither here nor there. You know, that's the way it is, and that's the fact of the matter. So we deal with it, we move on, and like I said, I've got absolutely no problem or heat with anybody in the Ring of Honor office. In fact, I talk to several of them all the time. So this too shall pass, my friend, as they say.
Tremendous. Now, I watched the 8208 match again today.
Okay.
And it blew me away again, brother. 4.5 stars. That's what I rated it. And I've said that publicly today. And I've taken a shitload of heat for it. But it was a throwback to, I mean, the other guy, Prazak, you know, on the commentary. You know, he's all, yes, this is definitely an NWA title match. And I got that feeling. You know, I've watched the match 2 times so far. Blow away.
Let me ask you a question. I'm just curious. I've always wondered how people come up with their quote-unquote star ratings. Now, obviously, it's subjective. And 4 stars to you might be 1.5 stars to somebody else. But you said you took heat for saying that. Well, what kind of heat?
Guys said that, friends of mine, they said to me that, you know, this wasn't a Ring of Honor match. I said, well, that was the point. I mean, okay. And they're all, you know, why'd you give it that rating? I said, first off, they captivated the fans. Okay. And this wasn't an ROH-style match. And, you guys grabbed the fans. You know, there was hard-hitting stuff. You guys told a hell of a story. It was brutal. I mean, it was brutal. You know, a couple of those clotheslines, brother, you know, you took Brent's head off. And I was just like, oh, dude, you just told that story and you connected with me. And the fans as well. That's why I gave it 4.5.
Well, I appreciate that. One thing I will say, and I hear this more and more from, you know, not only fans or, you know, but also some of the wrestlers, when we hear the phrase, quote, ROH style, I think to a man that would bother most of the guys in the Ring of Honor locker room, because we're trying to present professional wrestling as a sport, mm-hmm. and we have a hard time understanding, especially, I'm telling you right now, I don't get it, what exactly is Ring of Honor style? Anyone who's ever tried to explain that to me describes junior heavyweight wrestling style.
No. the Briscoes are a perfect example. You put a 40-minute match together in 20.
Okay.
That's it.
Well, what you just described isn't positive.
I love Jay and Mark to death. I just wish they would, you know, slow down. Too many finishes and not enough endings.
Well, okay, I get what you're saying, but I'll say this. If that is what, quote, ROH or Ring of Honor style is, then that's crap, that's garbage, and nobody in the locker room having it described to them that way would be happy with that. Again, none of us are perfect, but I think one of the criticisms of Ring of Honor, and I think it's very valid, is precisely what you just said. You know, too many finishers, not enough finishes, and that's true. And it's something that, you know, has come up numerous times in the last several months and even more pointedly recently as far back, I mean, even as recent as before the Boston pay-per-view, that there's a way to do things and most of the, I don't want to say most of the roster, but a large chunk of the matches aren't working the way they should necessarily. But you know what? Guys are learning. This is all a work in progress. I realize Ring of Honor has been in business for 6 years. But, you know, creative decisions and how matches are put together and whatnot. You know, these things all ebb and flow and change and morph with the times of what's popular, and I think that that style of wrestling is kind of, I think it's on its way out, actually. I think we're heading towards a period of more storytelling in the ring, which is how I was trained and how some of the older guys in Ring of Honor were trained, and I think above all, most of us feel like that's the way you make money. You know, maybe not always, but a lot of the time, less really is more if you do it right. So, yeah, okay, I get what you're saying now. I don't take that as a positive at all, but I get what you're saying.
Well, it's about time.
I mean, if my match wasn't Ring of Honor style and that's what their complaint was, I take that as a compliment.
There you go.
If what Ring of Honor style is what you just described,
well,
then their insult
is
a compliment.
In my circle of friends that we discussed, yes. I can't talk about you know, anybody outside my little circle, but or my bubble, shall we say. But
gotcha.
It was good stuff. It was good stuff.
Yeah,
and
I mean we tried to take it back, but also keep it modern. And I think as the match went on, at the very beginning, it was very slow and very methodical and done that way on purpose, and picked up towards the end of the match, I think. And, you know, I even think that we did too much towards the end of the match, but I haven't really found anyone else that agrees with me, so we shall see. It was a hell of a night. It was a hell of a match. I was equally as happy with the match I had with Brent in Philadelphia. The only things that kind of hamstrung us there is where we were on the card. We were second, so some of the things that we wanted to do in the match, we were unable to do only because it would have upstaged or taken away from things that were going to be happening later in the card. So as a result, I don't think we had time. Well, time was a big factor. I think we only went about 13 or 14 minutes in Philly when we went over 20 in New York. So the time element took away from building a little bit more emotion. I don't think we were able to get the people as red hot as we wanted, but I think had we had more time and a couple of other little things to help us along, we could have got there or even surpassed them, because the crowd of Philadelphia was amazing, and that building was jumping from beginning to end. So, like I said, two good matches, and looking to keep it going down the line.
Yeah, an 8-2, the table spot was just amazing. It was completely out of nowhere, and I was like, yes, yes, yes. I thought we were going to see good old-fashioned Flair thrown off the top, but no, he went through the table, and he destroyed that thing, and it was just blow-away stuff. I mean, even with the Sweeney interference and all that, it was just fun stuff.
Yeah.
That's one thing I'm going to miss, you standing next to Larry.
I already miss it. I already miss it, man. But you know what? Again, I don't think by any stretch this is the end of the road, as they say. You know, God willing, Ring of Honor is able to make $10 million on this last pay-per-view we shot, and some big conglomerate dumps a bunch of money into Ring of Honor, and a TV deal comes along, and then I think before you know it, I would be back being a prick on Ring of Honor events, and that'd be just fine by me.
Tremendous. Tremendous. So I have to know, how did Dave Marquez react to your match after?
The New York City event, the New York City match?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Oh, you know, Dave is the sort that he's very pointed in his words. He's careful not to give you too much emotion unless you've done something that he doesn't like. But I would say, much like a lot of the people who may not have had, shall we say, stellar expectations going in, we left Mr. Marquez with a smile on his face. And that was just enough. That was enough for me. I knew that at that point we had done what we needed to do. So, yeah, I would say without a question. You know, as a matter of fact, later on that night backstage, we were all of us smoking cigars and drinking beers, and it was a good time.
That's cool. That's good to keep Mr. Marquez happy. So is there any new developments with the NWA?
The NWA is having two big events. Let's see, what's today? I don't even know what today is. 25th. Yeah, so October 3rd in Tulsa at the Spirit Bank Event Center. I believe it will be the second event to grace that brand new building, and we're excited about that. The next night, just outside of Corpus Christi, Texas, in Robstown, Ric Flair is making his return to the NWA. We have a big card that night, and I will be defending the NWA World's title against Brent Albright with stipulation to be determined the night of. I think they're going to try and do fans choose a stipulation or something like that. We have some little things to work out in order to make that a possibility, but we're super excited about both events. Tulsa is Brent Albright's hometown, so I know that he's going to have family and friends on hand. He'll be facing Mike DiBiase for the NWA North American title, which if you pay attention to how the championships are, I guess, ranked in the NWA, that the North American title is one step below the world title, and that should be a good encounter. Big Daddy V from WWE is booked for both nights. Sean Waltman, X-Pac will be on both shows. Rob Conway, Blue Demon will be in Tulsa. And who else? Who else am I forgetting? Los Luchas, the NWA World Tag Team Champions.
Ace
will not be on the show. Ace is going to be around. It's just a matter of, you know, budgets and booking and whatnot. And if I had my way, Ace still would be on every show.
Yes.
But he'll be around. But, yeah, we're super excited about that. And then we are in the midst of working out several things with Big Vision Entertainment to, I guess, relaunch for, it seems like, the umpteenth time, but hopefully this time we'll do it the right way, the NWA Wrestling Showcase television program that will be emanating now from Hollywood, which is going to make things a lot easier for us just because of the connections with Big Vision. It's supposed to be shot at Columbia Square, which is a CBS studios on Sunset Boulevard, which is going to afford us pretty much any piece of television equipment you could need. And it's just a matter now of getting the right time to begin taping those new episodes of the show. And the idea here is to shop it to other potential carriers. So while Colors TV on the Dish Network has been the home of the NWA Wrestling Showcase since it was pretty much started, and is now in rerun mode, we're looking for, I dare say, bigger and better things, but I guess when you come down to it, that's precisely what the NWA is looking for. Not that Colors TV is a bad thing, you know, it reaches upwards of 15 million homes in our country, but the goal of this whole thing from the beginning, as I understand it, was for the NWA to really make a push to get their television product on a national platform. And with the partnership with Big Vision Entertainment, which is obviously the company who brought WSX to MTV, I think we have the opportunity. I think the time is now. We need to strike while the iron's hot. And hopefully within the next couple of weeks, 2-3 weeks, we can announce some really big things that I think are going to make that television process a lot easier. And I can't really say much more than that about that, but yeah, big things on the horizon, hopefully. It's going to take some luck and some fortitude and a lot of hard work. We are definitely happy to have Ric Flair back in the fold October 4th and can hopefully forge a much longer relationship with him going forward.
About fucking time.
Yeah, I hear that, man. I hear that, you know, and to his credit, you know, he has done everything there is to do in this business, and it is a privilege to work alongside with him. And even if it turns out to be for only one event, it validates a lot of the hard work that you've put in to say, you know, at least for one night, I'm going to sit here and lace my boots next to the greatest who ever did it. And just to pick his brain, I mean, that's a, you know, there's I don't know, 20,000 wrestlers in the world I think would kill for the opportunity to do just that. And hopefully he likes what he sees and who he's dealing with. And, you know, Lord knows, you know, I'd love to have his payday, but I hope that that suffices as well and that he's interested enough to go forward with things. And then who knows? I mean, I think the sky's the limit. I really do.
Yeah, it's him leaving the WWE, I think, is the best thing that ever happened to Rick. Just because now he can go out, work for whoever he wants, do any type of interview that he wants, and, you know, he's not being held down. And you know, geez, he shouldn't even be working anymore. You know, he just should be making appearances. That's it. You know, I mean, I honestly don't think he's going to get back in the ring again. I think he's done. And I think he's going to stay retired as far as being an active competitor because he doesn't want to look like he lied to the fans. You know, and...
at the end of the day, and I don't care what business it is, if it's sport, entertainment, you know, cutting grass, plumbing, whatever it is, at some point you get to a point in time where that's it, and you've done all you can do, and either due to age or injury or the fact that you don't want to do it anymore, at some point everything comes to an end. And I don't know if Rick will wrestle in the future. He certainly doesn't need to, I wouldn't think.
What does he have to prove?
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's what I'm getting at. This is in my estimation, and you know, dollars to donuts. I say Ric Flair is the best man to ever put on a pair of boots. Now, of course, that's up for debate. But you know, again, like we talked earlier, things being subjective, I could watch a Ric Flair match. And even more than that, Ric Flair interviews all day long. All day long.
There it is.
He's the best to put on a pair of boots, and like I said, man, it couldn't be a bigger honor than to pick his brain, you know. And you know what, man, I just think of the possibilities. It'd be a blast, you know, to have him as a part of things going forward. Can you imagine the interaction between the Nature Boy and the Scrap Daddy? That would be beautiful.
I think that Flair would be the only man that would be able to replace Larry Sweeney as your manager.
I don't think anybody can replace Larry Sweeney. I think Larry Sweeney, man, he is the future, if you know what I mean. Love Larry Sweeney. Larry Sweeney deserves a job.
Oh,
you know,
and then
he deserves a job making good coin.
Well, he should be a fucking GM of Raw. I mean, anything other than that Adam Lee goof. I can't stomach it. But
hey,
you know.
Did you not watch American Gladiators when you were younger?
Oh yeah, of course.
Don't sleep on Mike Adamly, bro. Just remember,
oh man,
that's the voice, and I don't care what the American Gladiators it's on now. Mike Adamly is American Gladiators. You know what I'm saying? When it was time to run the Eliminator, Mike Adamly was telling you what was going down. Just remember that. Just remember that, bro.
So, I've discussed this subject with many people. Do you feel that the Michaels Jericho program will end at the next pay-per-view?
Well, I don't know. I ain't the damn booker.
Well, I mean, in your opinion, I mean, they have the ladder match for the belt.
Yep.
You know, my idea is that the loser will not be able to get another shot. They'll do that whole thing, and then they'll win the Rumble, and they'll do it at Mania. And it's simple. And things don't need to be so difficult that they have been. And this is a natural program, and it's just completely entertaining, Adam. It's you know, it's shit that we watched in the 80s on TBS, brother. You know, this is Dusty and Tully, you know, kind of shit.
See, this is my problem with wrestling today, and I don't really think it matters what company you're in, Ring of Honor, WWE, TNA. Somewhere along the line, the people who are telling the stories, whether it be writers or matchmakers or bookers or whatever you want to call it, I think that we've lost sight in the wrestling industry of just how simple wrestling can be and should be. I think it's a story of a good guy and a bad guy. You invent an issue between them, and they fight over it. That simple. Nothing. It doesn't need to be anything more or less than that. And of course, then you expound upon it. But we get these convoluted stories and sometimes story arcs that start but never finish, or stuff that just comes out of nowhere, like people getting released. And it's just like, come on, man. You know, and then I think that turns fans off. So how long has the Jericho Michaels program been going?
5 months.
Well, I mean, if this was, you know, if this was back like on TBS or, you know, 82, 83, a program with the two guys like Michaels and Jericho, who are supremely talented, some of the best workers, you know, ever, arguably, they should get a hell of a lot more mileage than 5 months out of it. Again, the question begs, have you conditioned your audience to expect short-term feuds as opposed to 11, 12 months with a huge blow-off? To me, 5 months is baby steps, but if they've blown their wad, quote-unquote, and done everything they can do, you know, you don't want to get in a situation where you're trying to top yourself for the sake of topping yourself and in the meantime really hurting the story you've already told. So I don't know. I mean, to be perfectly honest, I haven't paid too much attention to it, other than I saw the match where Michaels had his eyebrow busted open with the elbow, and I liked the way that they did that. But after that, I mean, I'll be honest, I haven't seen much. So, but if it's only 5 months, I'm surprised it hasn't been longer. It sure, I guess, feels like it's been longer. But
well, they've had three singles matches, two on pay-per-view, and one was a Raw throwaway match. So, and they've done, like, I think one or two tags. So, and then the rest have been promos. So, I mean, they're as best as they can, they're keeping them apart, where it's not,
right,
you know, a constant. So I think that's why it's staying fresh. And the thing is, fans now have, you know, it's a fast food culture. You know, it really is.
Right. I'd agree with that wholeheartedly. People are in the mindset now where they want what they want, and they want it now.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in wrestling, I mean, and again, this is subjective in my opinion, but, dude, you got to take your time stirring the soup, brother, before you taste it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Because otherwise it's bland. So, but, yeah, no, it'll be interesting to see where it goes. One thing that I'm still confused on is you know, what exactly happened to my boy CM Punk. I mean, I understand from a storyline standpoint what happened, but I just don't really understand, you know, where you go from there. It's such a sudden thing, the way it went down, and it's just weird, man. Wrestling's weird. Sometimes I love it, most of the times I do, but there are days where I really do hate it.
I don't know what they're going to do with him. I mean, he was hot, and then some, you know, he was doing very well for himself with the belt.
Right.
You know, everything was clicking, and then they, you know, he was sacrificed. But hopefully, you know, he'll come out of it, and I think that he will, because they're going to give him the program with Orton when Orton comes back. So,
right,
you know, hopefully, you know, that's going to be Punk's payoff. Hopefully. Because that could be fun. They're both great in the ring, and they're both great in the stick, and, you know, It could be very, very fun. Can you hold on just a second, Adam? I'm going to play a quick promo that was requested by a friend of the show. It'll be on for about a minute, and then we can discuss it after. Okay, guys, this is Vito's promo on Brian Alvarez. Hold on just a sec, guys.
Brian Alvarez. Oh,
yes.
Damn. Okay, I got to watch this because I think I'm going to WrestleMania with him.
Okay. He's going to hear this tomorrow.
Let me tell you something, Brian Alvarez. You nothing but a no-good, yellow, lily-livered, sex-sucking dog is what you is. You're out there, you're trying to present wrestling news. There's no wrestling news. The only news that's out there is Brian Alvarez is sniffing jocks, and he's out there trying to find a scoop. There ain't no scoop. The scoop is, don't go to Brian Alvarez. Go to Between the Ropes. Go to RoboGuard Radio. Tell Brian Alvarez that he's a no-good yellow dog. He's just like Nikita Koloff, and that's what I'm talking about. Bottom line, first blood. That's it. Now then.
Vito.
Wow.
That's tremendous.
That was Vito DiNucci from Florida, former NWA World Tag Team Champion. He does the best Dusty Rhodes impersonations ever.
That was brilliant, I must say.
Yeah, we got to get Vito on the show again. He's so much
fun. You know
fun.
Who does a good Dusty Rhodes, too, but maybe not on that level, but Ace Steele does a hell of a Dusty Rhodes.
Really?
He does. I've had many a voicemail from Ace Steele that would be the equivalent to Dusty Rhodes cutting a promo about basically anything. He says to me sometimes he just does it when he's driving down the freeway, and the promo will consist of freeway signs that he's weaving into some random context, and I can't stop laughing. But, yeah, no, that was pretty damn good. That was pretty damn good, Dusty. Big fan of Dusty.
Well, since I've brought up the Fat Man, Dusty's gotten a lot of flack for, you know, pushing himself, you know, in the Crockett heyday. How do you feel about, you know, Dusty pushing himself up towards the top? Do you think it was the right move?
You know, hindsight's always 20/20. I think the fact of the matter is, and this is, I haven't seen this disputed anywhere, I can't think of a time where Dusty Rhodes wasn't, you know, if not the top babyface, had to be, you know, first or second. And anytime you've got someone with the popularity that Dusty had, I mean, how could you go wrong, really, pushing him? I mean, again, wrestlers, as bookers, sometimes get branded with the stigma that they're out there to push themselves. But I think if you go back and look at it, you can justify Dusty pushing himself because he was over. And at the end of the day, that's really all that matters. Could you draw money pushing Dusty Rhodes in the 80s? I mean, come on. That's easy. You know what I mean?
I
don't know how you would do it different. I mean, who else were the top babies at that point? Magnum T.A.? God, who else? I mean, there were so many of them, but Dusty Rhodes, you know? I mean, that name right there, how could you go wrong? You
know. Well, I mean, look who he took with him. You know, he went on the program with Flair, went on the program with Tully, and then, you know,
right.
You know, and he branched off and did other stuff, and then the Horseman thing and all that. I mean, geez, it doesn't get any better than 86 and 87.
No, God, no.
I mean, and thank God for WWE 24/7. That's all I have to say.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be the first to admit, and I think, you know, Bob Trovich and the executive board of the NWA, Marquez included, would tell you that WWE 24/7 is really breathing life into the brand once again, because it's a whole new generation of fans who, you know, a lot of them weren't even alive when this stuff was happening. And now they get to see it, and you know, obviously a totally different style than what they're used to, slower, things are drawn out, but we're talking about really the foundation for which professional wrestling today was built, and be that good or bad. You know, I've always said this, you know, that I wish I was born, you know, 18 years earlier than I was, and I wasn't, so, oh well, I digress, but yeah, thank God for the that which we grew up loving, my brother.
There it is. Well, see, the thing is, you know, the proof was in the pudding. I mean, they drew money. They made money. But I think that they did overdo Dusty and Flair. I think they may have overdone that. But there really wasn't that big baby, you know, to go with Flair at that time because they lost Magnum.
No.
Nikita, you know, they would push him up, but he wasn't, you know, that charismatic type of guy that'll, you know, get on a stick and put asses in the seats like Dusty would. Dusty would just cut a promo and bam, fill the building. And
there is,
I think that's what's missing. There isn't a draw now on TV. It's the brand. There isn't a draw. You can't credit anyone for drawing the big house at WrestleMania. The WWE drew the house. And I think that Vince has broken things down like that, so no one is bigger than the company, and I don't think it's right. I feel that guys should be able to go out there and, you know, try to pack a building, like you, for instance. Say on the NWA website, you're playing a promo for your show in Tulsa, and I feel that you should be given the credit for drawing that house as opposed to the brand. And Call me old school, whatever. But the thing is, guys don't get enough credit for the work that they do. I mean, with the exception of, you know, the good coin. But, yeah, I mean, It's a given.
Yeah,
but,
well, I mean, you know, I'm torn on this, too. Of course, there are indisputable names throughout wrestling history that have drawn, you know, Hulk Hogan, Ric Flair, Stone Cold Steve Austin, The Rock. But I've always been of the belief that really, at the end of the day, the marquee says wrestling. So there's going to be the segment of the fan base who's going to come and see wrestling just because it's wrestling, regardless of who's wrestling. Then you're going to get the fans on the periphery who are going to be drawn into a particular character or storyline or whatever, and that's going to bring them to the event when maybe they wouldn't have come otherwise. So I don't know, man. I mean, I think it's a combination of both. Like, for instance, the Ring of Honor, and we've had this debate in the locker room ad nauseum, none of us really think there's a quote-unquote draw as far as one particular wrestler. Because we've seen houses equal number with different rosters in the same town.
Mm-hmm.
So is there a particular wrestler or wrestlers that are the draw, or is Ring of Honor the draw? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And we did come to the conclusion that the promotion was the draw. Otherwise, you would have, you know, stark contrast in crowd numbers in the same city based on different talent rosters working. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
I don't know. I mean, that's just a theory, but, you know, like one I kind of prescribe to.
Now, when, you know, the NWA starts to do their thing again, are you guys going to try to, at least, you know, on a minimal basis, try to run a territory, at least on the West Coast?
I think that the whole point of doing this and really trying to do it right, because I think that if you really got to the heart of the matter with David Marquez and Bob Trowbridge and the people who were involved in the first two incarnations of the NWA television show, I think that the reasons we went on TV were flawed. The reason I think that any wrestling company should have TV is to feed your live event sales and pay-per-view if you have it. The way that the WWE does business is a tried and true method, and that's why it's a publicly traded company with billions of dollars. And you never hear them talking about financial problems or anything like that, because they've got their method, they've proven it works, and they do it better than anybody else has. So you can't say that the NWA television program, which, like I said, on Colors TV goes out to about, and I could be wrong on this, but I want to say 15 million homes. And it's not like those 15 million homes are all centered in one area. It's relatively spread out. So you're hitting a large number of people when you look at the number 15 million, but when you look at the television markets across the country and then cut that by those that have Dish Network and then cut that by those who would be inclined to watch Colors TV anyway, and then cut that by the wrestling fans who know the television programs on Colors TV, what we were doing on that program wasn't generating ticket sales to any live events. And if it was, it was in a very small number. So I think that it was counterproductive to the business model of having a television program and using that to feed your live gate. And, of course, at your live gate, you sell your merchandise and tickets to the next live gate, and then if you have pay-per-view, you build towards that. Obviously, we didn't have the means to do that. So the whole point of going back on a relaunch with the NWA program is to do it in a way that, and I like to say, the right way. And that's going to be with a viable television partner who's in the markets where we feel the NWA still has a presence or could have a presence based on the past, and markets that will sustain wrestling. We've done great numbers in Texas, in multiple cities. We've done great numbers in Las Vegas. We did great numbers in Atlanta. We did great numbers in the Northeast, in Rhode Island and in New Jersey, which nobody even knows about these shows because they weren't well publicized, at least not on the Internet. But when you're drawing, you know, 2,000, 2,500 people to events, and especially in today's wrestling climate, that's a respectable house. So the object would be to find a television partner who's looking to, who'd be willing to invest the time and money necessary to help the program grow. And obviously we'd like one that reaches the markets that we've already been successful in, because that we feel is a foundation to build on. And so it's going to take time. You know, we're going to be taping new episodes here in the next month or two, I would imagine. As far as when those are going to air, it's hard to say. I think a lot of that is going to be used to put together a pilot, which will then be the focal point of presentations in the attempt to sell the show, much like Big Vision did with WSX, and they struck gold with MTV. Now, we all know that MTV didn't really invest the time in promoting that, and of course it went away a lot faster than anyone thought it was going to. But with the NWA, obviously, is a more traditional wrestling program. I would venture a guess that MTV would not be a network that we would be pitching it to, simply because it doesn't fit the mold that that MTV currently has going on. So, you know, time will tell. I mean, it's is television necessary for the NWA to exist? No, and I think that we've been proving that, even though we've been on TV. But it, like I said, that television program isn't feeding anything necessarily to the kitty. You know, people aren't making a living off of that. So we're going to try and do it right. And as long as that takes, will be as long as it takes.
Now that you're not going to be working for Ring of Honor on weekends, would you be able to make dates for Jesse Hernandez in the Empire Wrestling Federation?
I would make dates for Jesse Hernandez now already if Jesse and I could agree on that green, as they say. You know, I don't wrestle just for the sake of wrestling. I do it as a means to put food on the table and feed my son and my family. So, you know, while I love Jesse and I've known him for a long time, I think even Jesse would tell you that his budget isn't such that he and I will be having any long-term relationship wrestling-wise. And that's nothing against Jesse. He knows what his market is, and he does it well, and they fill that building in Covina every month. And and he does it with guys that he doesn't necessarily have to pay a whole lot, and that's great. That's a perfect place for young wrestlers who are looking to learn. That's a perfect place for them to go. And Jesse's one of the best to learn from in California.
Yes, in the States, brother.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. He's been around forever.
Still, you know, and, you know, he does it the old way. Every time I call him, hey, brother, how you doing? Oh, I'm out putting up flyers.
I'm putting out
posters.
That's Jesse.
That's it.
Tried and true. And some of the best crowds to work in front of. The times that I have worked for Jesse have been a blast. One of the matches that I worked for Jesse was part of the NWA World Title Tournament back in that would have been last 07, so probably in the late spring, early summer. I wrestled Chad Parham from Georgia at one of Jesse's events in Covina, and the place was packed. And the best part about it is, I would say 75% of the people in there were kids, you know, so they're having the time of their life to begin with. They're seeing wrestling, and of course that makes our job in the ring so much easier, because we're not working with a room full of critics. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
And that's when you really feel, I guess, fulfilled. That's when you feel fulfilled, when you can entertain a kid and you can really take them on that emotional roller coaster. You know, you feel good about it, regardless if you're the heel, the baby face, what the finish is. You don't care, because you've got 300, 400, 500 kids on their feet and cheering that baby face on. I know I'm doing something right. And that's the kind of crowd that Jesse draws, and God bless him for it.
All right. So are you picking up any dates with SoCal Pro?
Yeah, I love Jeff, and Jeff Dino, the promoter of SoCal Pro. So I will work for Jeff whenever my schedule allows. And fortunately, for the past several shows, things have meshed. And so we've been able to do our thing together, and you know, this whole thing with Ring of Honor is relatively new to the public, but I've known this has been coming for probably a month. So my schedule's been filling up with other things, and like I said, you never know when I might resurface in Ring of Honor. But yeah, as my schedule allows, I will work for Jeff Dino and SoCal Pro. One of the major things I like about it is it's 35 minutes from my house.
There you go.
You couldn't ask for a nicer guy to work for. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I have to agree. The boss is a great guy. Cheap plug, WrestleWarehouse.com. Any SoCal Pro Wrestling show from this year, they have all been blow away. Top to bottom, opening match to the main events, just been, I can't put Jeff and his product over enough. It's just amazing. I'm due
just,
for a trip
yeah,
to San
just
Diego,
like Jesse's
so.
Too. Just like Jesse's, it's the perfect place for younger wrestlers to learn. To learn. And you've got guys, when I'm there and when the Ballards are there, you know, we're more interested in helping out the other matches than we are our own, you know. Sometimes when you've been around long enough to go out in front of a crowd like Jeff draws, which again is a lot of kids, you can kind of be on autopilot. And I don't say that meaning you phone it in. What I'm saying is you don't have to rack your brain for things to do because the crowd you're working with is going to react to whatever you come up with anyhow. So we can devote some of our time, in fact, a lot of our time, to helping the guys who've only been around a year, year and a half, 2 years, listen to them put their matches together and help them if there are holes in it, or maybe they have something backwards, or maybe they should put something here instead of there, or explain to them maybe why this finish doesn't work, but this one would work better to make the show flow better. You know, that's what the locker room at SoCal Pro really sounds like, and it's a great place to be. And to see the guys come back from their match and say, you know what, that was, you know, thank you for that idea, or, you know, I didn't like the way we did this. What do you think would have been better if we had tried this? I mean, it's all about learning. It's a proving ground. It's a place to learn. And in wrestling, you never stop learning. I don't care if you're working for SoCal Pro, the NWA, Ring of Honor, TNA, or WWE. You never stop learning. So,
and you sit and you watch a show on DVD, and you can tell from the opening match all the way up to the main event that each match, the guys in it, they know their place, and they understand their place on the card. And I have to commend Jeff for that. It's a tight run ship, and guys know their place. And that's what, you know, that's not what you get, you know, on the majority of indies. I mean, let alone, you know, WWE and TNA is a whole different animal, but
sure.
You know, guys know their place. They're not going to show up the main event, you know. And
well,
that's
you know, respect. And I want you to ask Jeff why that is in SoCal Pro and see what he tells you. But I would tell you that is a huge problem. And this is going back to Ring of Honor. That's a huge problem in Ring of Honor, and it is a product of the guys, meaning the wrestlers, having the perception that there's an expectation for them to perform a certain level regardless of what match you're in. And I think that a lot of the guys in Ring of Honor, and people may disagree with this, but I would say that a lot of the guys in Ring of Honor even are green in the sense that they don't understand card placement and how to work within that card placement. Everybody needs to understand, you know, any wrestler would tell you that you want to build a match from the beginning to the end, but just like Jerry Lynn said in Boston before our pay-per-view, you can't forget that the show itself also has to build from beginning to end. From the first match to the second to the fourth to the fifth to the main event, it should build, and you want that huge crescendo to happen at the right time. For the match, it's at the finish. For the show, it's the main event. And not enough independent cards are booked that way, even up to and including Ring of Honor and some of the TNA and even WWE stuff. I've seen WWE shows that the crescendo is halfway through and then you leave your crowd flat after the main event. I don't understand why, but it happens.
There's no excuse for that to happen in WWE. There's no excuse.
No, I agree. Hey, there's really no excuse for that to happen in wrestling, period. If you got people in the locker room running the ship the right way, you know, and things happen on shows. I'm not saying that, you know, every booker is terrible. You know, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is it's just like any episodic television program. You want the last thing the people see to make them want to see the next thing. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Mundo, brother. That's what
hooked me. That should be the goal. That should be the goal.
That's what hooked me to CBS, you know, in 85 and 86. That's what hooked me because everything tied together in the end. You know, and that I think that's what's missing. And I think what needs to be done is I think that Bill Watts needs to get off his butt and start going around to different companies and doing workshops and, you know, and teaching booking. Because, you know, now it's just you sign these guys, you show up at the building, you know, it's a clusterfuck pretty much. And I honestly, my personal favorite booker was Bill Watts. The UWF stuff was just brilliant. The best TV I've ever seen, 1987, UWF with Eddie Gilbert, and that was just the best TV ever.
You know what I liked about that stuff too? It didn't beat you over the head and make you think that it was smarter than you were.
Exactly.
It simply presented you a story and let you form an opinion. It didn't do anything subversive or try to go over anybody's head. It was, you know, this is the good guy, this is the bad guy, this is what they're pissed at each other about, and now they're going to fight.
There it is. Nice and simple.
A little comment about Bill Watts. We were lucky enough in Ring of Honor to have him in for a few shows. I guess would it have been 05, maybe 06? And I happened to be involved, especially in one in Chicago, where he was introduced to the crowd and with Jim Cornette, and I was able to interrupt them and kind of cut a little promo on Cornette and Bill Watts. And like, I'm thinking to myself, this is fucking great. You know what I mean? Bill Watts, I mean, at that point, I mean, probably to this day, has no clue who I am, but I sure as hell knew who he was and respected and really admired the things that he had done. So it's cool to say that at least that I was involved in an angle with Bill Watts and Jim Cornette on the same show. So that's fun. That's one to hang a hat on. So.
There it is. All right, brother. Well, we're going to wrap up. ER is on in a few minutes, so, you know, priorities.
Wow. How far I've fallen, bro. How far I've fallen. People watch ER now?
Hey, the season's starting tonight, brother.
Who's left on that show?
The cute little Indian chick.
That helps me, the cute little Indian chick.
Yeah, the little chick from India. John Stamos is still on there.
Uncle Jesse is on ER. Uncle Jesse is on ER.
That makes my wife happy, so...
And no, you watch it. You're the one that watches it.
Well, she watches too, so.
You are pathetic. Do you know that?
Yes, I am. And I'm proud to admit it. Alrighty, boss.
Wow.
If anybody wants to contact you, since you know, your schedule is opening up, how could people contact you?
You know what? I don't want people to contact me. I want people to write. I want people to email. I want people to fax, perhaps send Morse code. Even smoke signals. I want the people who are up in arms at the fact that I have been sent on a hiatus from Ring of Honor to write your congressman, your alderman, maybe your precinct committeeman. Perhaps you want to send email to Ring of Honor itself. Demand that you want the last remaining real heel in professional wrestling back in Ring of Honor.
There we go. What more can I say? All right, champ. It was my pleasure.
You have nothing to say. You're about to go watch ER. You're going to watch ER with the cute Indian chick and Uncle Jesse.
There it is. Thank you for your time, brother. It was my pleasure. It's always fun having you on, man.
I appreciate that. I'll fast. Anytime you want to do it again, KZ, you know where to find me.
All right, champ. Thanks, brother. Take care now.
Take care. God bless.
All right. Oh, wow, that was the NWA World Heavyweight Champion, Scrap Iron Adam Pearce. Wow, we survived another show. RebelGuardRadio.com, BlogTalkRadio.com, /RebelGuardRadio, and WrestleWarehouse.com. We'll see you next Thursday.